Okay, well, hello to everyone out there. I wanted to start this podcast because it's kind of almost like a journal. You're just telling your life to the microphone and it records everything for you. And if you're familiar with the scriptures and with the Bible and all those things, all that was recordings, people's journals of their lives. And to this day, people are reading it and it's inspiring them and helping them, or they're learning from these people's mistakes that are in the scriptures and it's helping their lives. So that's the way I see this podcast, is if I can share my life and it can help somebody out there, I think that's a great thing. So here I am. Putting it all out there, and whoever has the similar experiences, are going through it, or are have been there already, and maybe this is just a reminding them of where they were and how they're getting and where they are now. Great. Whatever your situation is, I'm not here to judge. I'm just here to tell my story and hopefully it helps everyone out there. Okay, the story begins in 1983. Obviously, I don't know anything from then. I was just born. And I was born in California, West Covina. To my knowledge, we were there for all I remember most of my life. I remember I lived in Seattle, Washington, in Kent. Is that what they call it? I used to attend Sunnycrest Elementary. And I think those are the only schools I remember. Sunnycrest Elementary. And another one was... oh, that was in Federal Way. And then Pine Tree Elementary when I was in Kent. Anyways, most of my life, that's what I remember. Most of my younger years, I remember just being with all my family, being someone we're very family-oriented. I remember when we would get together, it would just be these big family get-togethers. So, let's see. Lived most of my life in Seattle, Washington, and in Federal Way, in Kent. And then, as I got older, we lived a very comfortable life. We had a nice house. And it's funny because we moved into this neighborhood. We started off in housing in Kent. It's called Springwood, if anybody remembers that. Shout out to you guys. But we started off in Springwood. And very humble beginning. My family, we have six of us. Anyways, we started off, we came from American Samoa. My mom and dad, they moved back and forth. My dad was in the Marines, and so you can imagine we move all over the place. So we ended up moving from American Samoa to, back to America, where I was born, and then in California, then we were in Kent. And that's where we started off in Springwood. It was a very nice neighborhood. I never really knew that we were poor. I never did. And I've never thought of myself as, like, put myself in a class, upper class, middle class, lower class. No. My parents were very good at providing for our families. I didn't know that we were struggling, that we needed food here and there, that mom would go to the food banks and stuff like that. I didn't know that. And so I'm very grateful for my parents for providing that lovely home for me, and that atmosphere where even if we were struggling, I didn't feel it and I didn't know it. And we've always had food on the table, and we've always had clothes on our backs. We've always had a roof over our head. So we started off in this apartment in Springwood, and we had nothing. We were literally sleeping on the mats because mom and them, we had mats. I don't know where they got it from. Maybe they brought it from Samoa or something. Anyways, I do remember one day as we were sitting there in this, I love this apartment. It was downstairs and upstairs. I think there was like 3 bedrooms. I'm not sure. Yeah. And I loved it. You know, as a kid, it was awesome. You know, we came from American Samoa where we had a nice house there too. And then we came to this apartment. And next thing I know, I woke up in the morning and it was like Christmas. Because this big U-Haul or this big truck came and pulled in front of our house. And they just started bringing in beds. They started bringing in bunk beds. This nice living room set. Dining room set. And this nice bed frames. And they brought it in and food. And all I remember was, I don't know, it was a lady. And I think that was a Relief Society president. And the bishop, we are LDS, and all this stuff came from the Deseret Industry, the bishop's storehouse, the food, and all the stuff came. No money down, no nothing. And I think it was because my mom was she called them and she asked them, and the church does that for everyone, you know. And so, but for me, that was amazing. Anyways, we had a great time in staying there, and in Springwood, they had a rec center in the front where we would go there, especially on summers, where they would bring lunches, and we could be able to eat there and then hang out at the recreation center there. It was I loved it. It was very nice. After a while, we ended up moving away. My dad was always gone. I do remember my dad always being gone. Later on, I realized that he used to work on the boats. It was called Angel. It was a huge boat company that he would go to Russia and all these places. But he would be gone for months at a time. Most of the time I would see him would be on Christmas. but my mom was always the one at home, watching us, taking care of us. And I am the youngest. I was born in 83, but I am the youngest of my brother, of 6 kids. And that's, let's see, Lau, Ula, Gama, Fungabai, Amamaula, Grace, and then me. Oh, youngest of, yeah, of 7 kids. Oh, there we go. Anyways, we were moving away. And all I remember is going from this little apartment to this huge 2-story house in Kent. I mean, in Federal Way, with a huge backyard, huge front yard, a big garage, everything. This place was awesome. Upstairs was like almost like an attic kind of thing. It wasn't, you could still stand up straight, but upstairs was also a nice pool table area where we had our pool table there, and it was just so nice. Mom decorated the whole house up and down. I loved living there. Like I said, my upbringing, I never felt poor. I never felt, you know, my mom and dad did an amazing job at helping, at keeping us, you know, fed and roof over our head. Anyways, my dad would come around Christmas, I believe so, that like around those kind of times. He'd be gone for like 3 months and come back. But I remember it always being something that I looked forward to, was to see him. And he would always come home with this scruffy beard, like he hasn't shaved, and like he looked like Santa Claus. Like he hasn't shaved in forever. And he's just this tiny, my dad is short, and I loved to see him. He always came with this, he always made me feel like a princess. I was so glad to have my dad in my life. Now that I know why he was always gone, was because the only way to afford that life we had and that beautiful house And everybody had their own room, and we had food and all those things. The only way to afford it was for him to be gone, to be away from us for that long. And you know, it is, my dad passed away in 2017, and I'm just so grateful for all the things that he'd done for us. And just that hard work ethic that helped us get through, that has been passed on to a lot of us. And anyways, moving on. This big, huge house. Dad comes home here and there and 3 months here and all that. But in this house, later on, I would realize after later, now I'm married. Later on, as talking with my husband, I didn't realize that he was living down the street from me in the housing, the government housing, right next door to us. And we actually went to the same school, and we caught the same bus, and that was amazing too. To think that at 9 years old, I knew, saw my husband, rode on the bus with him, never knew him, and then come, you know, and then meeting him later on. It's just, it's crazy. Anyways, so. We had a nice life. It was wonderful. It was fun. And I loved it, you know. And in that home that we had, my mom, there were so many people that came through there. My uncles, my aunties, that we helped and that we were able to house and help them be able to just better their lives. And then they would move on and find their own places in there. But this is kind of was like their refuge, and I thank my mom for that, because it's even now she's still doing that here in Samoa now, where we live now. She's still helping people, and we'll get into that a little bit later. So 10 years old, my mom and my dad make a decision that's going to change my whole life. They sit there and they make a decision that we are going to move back to the island. And that was in 94, was when they decided that. We packed up everything, and my mom and dad, my mom took me and my sister, Grace, and we left. And we headed for Samoa. Upon arriving here, it was a big culture shock. So many things happened in Samoa. So many things that had, that changed, you know, that changed our lives. The other culture shock was going to school here. It was like teachers could beat you up. When you go on the bus to get to school, as a teenager, we actually have to wear uniforms, and we wear dress, pretty much a dress. So we wear a shirt, and then we wear this, like, this skirt that has suspenders. And my color was yellow and blue. And because I go to Besenga school, Besenga Elementary School. And then I went to CCWS later, which is Church College of Western Samoa. And that's still the LDS school. I loved that school because at least there we didn't get beat up. Especially in high school, it was very, we had our principal, and the way that the church was, they didn't, you don't beat up the kids, you don't abuse the kids, stuff like that. When I was in primary school, though, oh my gosh, that's my first taste of being hit by teachers, and just, it was horrible. Anyways, so I came here when I was 10. And I pretty much stayed till I was 15 or 16. I stayed through my whole teenage years. Growing up as a teenager here in Samoa was very difficult, very different. But I liked it. It taught me, the first thing that I thought of when we came here, the first couple of days, I missed the things that I took for granted. Throwing that donut away. The McDonald's, the all the stuff that was so, that was always available to me, not having it made me appreciate it more. I appreciated all those things. I appreciated the life that I had, because when we came here, seeing other kids, kids that are like 7 years old, 8, 9, 10, younger than me, out there cooking. And not just cooking on a stove like we do in America. No, they were outside hitting the sticks, throwing it in the what do you call it? That pit, and lighting the fire and blowing it and waiting for it, the fire to get high enough, bringing the bananas, and they make the saca. That's what they do. We call it saca. It's just bananas with coconut milk. And so you boil the bananas first, but before you can boil it, you have to take off the skin. And it's not like a ripe banana where you can just peel it off. No, you have to sit there with a little wedge, like a little stick, and you start peeling off the banana. And it gets sticky. It gets all over the place. I don't know how they do it, but as young as 7, 8 years old, I already seen them. They have this sense of responsibility whereas I was raised in America, I did not have yet. Like, that sense of maturity that they had at that age. I got there and I was like, ugh, I don't want to do any of that stuff. It was funny. But also very eye-opening and very inspiring for me as a young kid, thinking to myself, okay, this 7-year-old, this 8-year-old can do this already, you know, and I'm crying about not being able to watch all the channels because now I came to a place in Samoa where there's only 3 channels. Anyways, so I loved it. Coming here changed my life. I'm grateful to my parents for bringing me here. When we were here, we built a house, and we built a store, and that's how we were able to take care of our needs. And because we had that store, also my dad was in America, still on the boat, and we only seen him here and there because he still had to provide for us over there, and while we try to make things work here. So that's what happened so far. 10, I turned 10, 11, 12. I'm realizing now that birthdays, and all those things, although they're important, they're not the most important thing. In Samoa, we didn't celebrate it like that. So yeah, we had birthdays. Mom, you know, said happy birthday and all that stuff. But it wasn't as big as it was when I was in America. Here, it's like, oh, it's your birthday. Okay, do your chores and go to school, you know. And it was just a different kind of life for me. So that's 10, 11, 12. That was what was happening at that time. Meanwhile, as a teenager, there's one thing that I noticed here in Samoa is that the shocking level of how uncomfortable parents are to talk to their kids about sex, to talk to their kids about their periods, to talk to them about life, about growing up and the things that are going to happen to you. That I can say that was missing in my life. And I think it was because my mom grew up in a time where they don't, you know, talking about sex is very no. It's a no-no. you don't talk about it. You don't tell your kids about it. They're just going to learn it. And lo and behold, that is what happened to me. I think around 13 or 14, I had my period. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't told about it. I wasn't, you know, hey, Paul decided to tell me, you know, hey, Crystal, this is what's going to happen. This is this and that. And all those things, like even talking about sex and all those stuff, it was very no-no. We don't do that here, especially in Samoa. That's something that they just don't talk about. But that is the most biggest thing, most important thing that I feel that could have helped me at that time. And I still see it now, that it's happening now in 2020. But back then, it was 1994, 95, 96, 97, it was still bad. You know, we didn't really talk about those things. So what happened was I was going through puberty and my mom didn't think to tell me, probably because her upbringing, her mom didn't tell her, you know. And so I went through that part of my life, puberty and all those things, very scared and very surprised at every little thing that happened. I would ask my friends, which wasn't the greatest thing because they didn't even know what was going on in their lives. So anyways, 13, 14, 15, I got the hang of it. I'm starting to understand, you know, my cycle. Okay, you're going to have a period every month. Just get ready. I had so many accidents at school that was very embarrassing because I didn't even know that it was going to be reoccurring. I remember one of the dances that I went to, and I stood up to dance, and for probably about like 10 minutes, nobody said anything. They were just laughing at me, and I realized that my whole skirt in the back was bloody. And that was just, that just really broke me, my confidence, and just kind of, so that's one of the things that I would really recommend for people, for parents, especially me as a parent now of 3 kids. My daughters are very young, but at a young age, I've already talked to them about their periods and about their bodies, about sex, I don't think that, and this is just me, but I don't think that there is such an age where you shouldn't be talking about. I mean, I don't think that there's an age group. As soon as they're of age to understand, like, 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10. I mean, you just kind of talk to them in a way that they can understand at that time. Obviously, a 6-year-old, you're not going to go tell them stuff, you know, like, well, when you have sex, no, but you do tell them stuff like, if somebody is touching you here, or, you know, it's time for you to, you know, you need to tell mommy. You need to tell mommy because nobody should be able to touch you here. There is always a conversation to be had about these things because it's so important. Especially here in Samoa, I think a lot of times there were cases where if my parents told me, I would have been able to talk to them and let them know that this was happening to me, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of cases of molestation and stuff like that. That I went through, but these things made me stronger and helped me be able to know how to help my kids as they get, you know, protect them from it by, it's very simple, by just telling them, opening your mouth and giving them that knowledge, letting them know this, don't let people do this, and that it doesn't matter if it's your uncle or your auntie or whoever it is. Anybody can do this. You just need to let me know, like, stuff like that. Anyways, those are the things that I feel strongly about, things that happened to me in my, before I even hit 16. And it was from family members that were close to me and teachers. And that's just part of life, right? Now that back then in 94 and all that stuff, it was like, oh my gosh, this happened to you. Now it's just like, so, you know, the level of craziness that we are in 2020, and this, how some people are so sick minded, and the fact that no age group of kids is safe from pedophiles and all those stuff, the more reason it is for you to talk to your kids about sex and about molestation and about people touching them, about their private parts, about their everything. Every aspect of their life or every part of their body, you should be explaining it to them. Don't let them learn it from the world. Because when they learn it from the world, it's more brutal, it's more hurtful, and it can scar them for life. So anyways, moving on, I hit 16. Oh my. So it's already like, we're already almost at 25 minutes. So I'm going to end this segment here. And if you guys want to know more about my life, how at 16 I went back to America, and from then on I never came back, how I met my husband and his disease that he has that we're dealing with now, and all these things, stay tuned, and I hope to see you on the next one. Bye. Have a nice day.